When you're buying a property at auction, you have to comb through the legal pack.
They're not very easy to understand.
I don't think there's as much transparency. A question you should ask yourself is, why is this property being sold at auction? Some of the offers that are being accepted, ridiculous, way below guide, way below reserve.
What are the biggest cons or the biggest mistakes that you've come across?
If you haven't got the money, you're going to be in breach of contract. Then there could be significant legal implications. You can have a legacy of wealth from property auctions, or you could have a legacy of liability.
Hey, I'm Russell Leeds and welcome to the Property Investors Podcast. This week, I'm joined by Julie from Creative Legal Solutions. She's a property solicitor and we're going to be talking about auctions, how you can buy from auction, how you can make money from auction, and most importantly, how you can not make big mistakes when buying from auction. So thank you ever so much, Julie, for joining us today.
Russell, it's an honor. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no problem at all. So one of the things that I always think, I always sort of warn people, I suppose, especially newbies to property, is it is risky buying from auction. You know, if you had a property that had loads of problems, you'd probably whack it on auction. I know you have a lot of clients that buy from auction. What would you say were the pros, first of all? What are the pros from buying at auction?
So the pros are the speed and the certainty. When buying at auction, you know that if it goes into whatever auction cycle, you will have a clearly defined completion date if it sells. That could be 28 days, that could be 14 days, or whatever is stipulated in the special conditions. So it's that speed, Russell, that certainty that we all want. Because you and I know that sometimes when you're buying a property conventionally, you could actually be in the conveyancing whole cycle for over 7 months or even longer sometimes, dependent on the property, the type of inquiries and loads of other things. But with property auctions, you don't have that. So those are the two things that I would say.
So
are
speed.
Super and certainty.
And certainty.
Yeah.
And what about getting great deals?
Oh, yes. I almost forgot that. For me, maybe it's because I mainly focus on the legals now. I have bought quite a lot of properties myself at auction. But yeah, you can get really, really good deals. You can actually have a legacy, you know, of wealth from property auctions, or you could have a legacy of liability.
That's the pros. And then the cons are, along with the speed, I suppose, you're forced into buying it, right? So if you bid on a property at auction and then you realize, oh, actually, I had a friend, he got new into property, saw what was going on, and he said, he rang me up, he goes, hey, I've just bought from auction. I was like, oh, I was worried straight away.
Naturally.
I was like, oh no, have you seen it? No, I haven't seen it.
Oh,
he goes, but it was a brilliant deal, can't go wrong. But the property was literally, you looked at it, you could see it was sinking right on the one side. It was,
no way.
It looked terrible. God. And I was like, oh no, I feel really. And I've known other people that have bought from auction and then not been able to get finance.
Yes.
And they've been screwed, right?
Yes.
While you can get a good deal and while there are pros, what are the biggest cons or the biggest mistakes that you've come across as a property solicitor?
Yeah, really good point there. And I'm guilty of that. One of the first properties I bought at auction, I didn't view it at all. Russell.
Really?
Yes. And then when I went in, there was nothing. It was a shell. I thought it was going to be a property ready to let, and it really wasn't. So there was nothing at all. It was unmortgageable.
What? No, was this before you were a property solicitor?
Well, it was after.
After?
Yeah, it was after, because being a solicitor is one thing.
Yeah.
Being a property investor is a totally different thing. Now I'm a successful property investor and I'm also a successful solicitor. But before then, when I started my property investment journey, I also made mistakes, just like anybody else does.
Mm.
So that was one of them. So when I speak to my clients, I'm like, have you viewed the property? If you can't view it yourself, why don't you send a local agent? Why don't you go online and get another company like Viewbo or whoever? But at least just get somebody there to view. So when you told me the story about your friend, I could resonate with that, like from a personal perspective. So that's one big thing. View, inspect the property. Very, very important. And if you can, carry out a survey. If you're getting lending, this is where it gets really, really risky. Because sometimes when people are buying at auction, they get a mortgage broker who says, yep, definitely, you've got a decision in principle. We can get you the loan. But a decision in principle is just a decision in principle.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It doesn't mean you're actually going to get the money. And 90% of the times, people don't actually get the money before completion because it's only 28 days, isn't it?
Mm.
Most of the times, 20 working days, sometimes 14 days. So people actually struggle if they're getting a mortgage. So it's not really something that I would recommend. Some people get bridging, which is great, but you and I know the disadvantages of bridging. So it's great to get bridging to save you, but you have to have an exit strategy.
And even with bridging though, 28 days, that's not very long.
True.
To get bridging, right? I would be very scared personally if I didn't have the money in the bank.
Yeah.
Right? Or at least, you know, a guarantee of the money from a bridge. You know, you can, for example, you can put a charge on another property and have the money guaranteed. If I had that, then fair enough. But I'd be very scared having to get the money in. Even with an extension. Oh, another 7 days.
Yeah.
Great. It's not a lot of time. And the risk, it's quite high risk, isn't it?
It is.
So would you say the first big tip you have to do is make sure that you've got your finance?
Yes, I agree with you, Russell. Yeah, make sure you put your financial house in order. That's of paramount importance, because if you haven't got the money, you're not going to buy the property. But not only are you not going to buy the property, you're going to be in breach of contract. Just like you said a few moments ago, your friend said, yeah, I've just bought this property. That's fundamental, because once the hammer falls, you have bought the property, you have exchanged contracts. And if you want to renege on that, then there could be significant legal implications. Not only could you lose the deposit, you could also be lumbered with additional costs by way of damages. And you and I know that in law, damages are to put you back in the position you would have been in had the wrong not been committed.
Yeah.
Yes. So all the incidentals, if they're reasonably foreseeable and if they're closely linked to the transaction, so you could be paying a lot of money. But not just that, I've had clients who have pulled out of a property for like £100,000 and then it was relisted again in the next auction cycle. And now it's a fire sale and they sold the property for like £80,000. My client who had breached the contract had to pay the difference between the £100,000 and the £80,000. Which is 20,000, lost the deposit, and then had to pay all the other incidents.
Wow. What's the worst case? A client that's been hit the hardest by bidding an auction and then not having the money to go through with it.
For me, the hardest one is from an emotional perspective, because this lady contacted me. She was super duper excited, single parent. She just bought a piece of land up north for 2,000. And she's telling me a story. She's saying, Julie, I've read your book. I'm super empowered. I can do it too if you can do it. So I bought a piece of land up north. Could you help me with the conveyancing? I was more than excited to help her, Russell. But once we started looking through all the documentation, I found that she was lumbered with additional costs, like the premium, buyer's premium, seller's premium, and loads of other different costs, including solicitor's fees. And that totted up to like 15,000. So that was in addition to the £2,000 that she'd paid. And she didn't have that much. She only had a maximum of like 5,000. She'd saved this money for the longest of times. And she thought this was the first step onto the property ladder. But was it though? No, it was more of a stumble.
Wow. So that's like 15,000, I mean, percentage-wise.
Thank you.
That is...
disproportionate.
Yeah.
Yeah, staggering.
For someone that's got 5,000, they've already spent half their money and now they need all their money and three times that again.
Exactly. And who has that under their pillow?
Wow, that is crazy. Yeah, yeah. So, all right. So first thing we need to do is make sure we get our finance all lined up. But that was slightly different though, because that wasn't an issue with she didn't have the finance. That was that she misunderstood the contract, right? So... I suppose that brings us on to the next thing. Number one, you need all your money lined up. Number two, you need to know how much money you need, because there can be additional costs. Yeah. Where did she go wrong here? Where should she have found out about the additional costs? Because it's not just like, they can't just go, surprise. They have to tell you, right?
Yes.
But she missed that. So where did she mess up?
Yeah, really good point there. She messed, I hate to say messed up. What she could have done differently was she probably could have read the legal pack, reviewed all the documents in there, because this information is normally contained in the special conditions. So if you read the special conditions, you'll be able to see the small print there. It's not always small. It's probably the same font, but it's small print because sometimes instead of the figures being written numerically, they'll be written in words and things like that. So when you're buying a property at auction, you have to comb through the legal pack, read it. That's super duper important. Not just read it, but read and understand it. If you're not sure, consult with a solicitor just to make sure that you are actually getting into what you think you're getting into.
And someone that doesn't know what they're doing, when you read these, I mean, I've bought from auction, I've read through them. They're often written, not in jargon, but but they're not very easy to understand, are they? For a layperson that's not a solicitor,
yeah,
they're written in such a way. I would recommend, if I was saying to someone buy from auction, is do get a solicitor to read it. You read it first, sure. Yeah. See if there's any red flags.
Yeah.
What are some typical red flags that you want to be looking for in these legal packs, or you'd want your solicitor to find for you?
Getting a solicitor to read the legal pack is super important, and we offer that as a service. So if people wanted us to read the legal pack for them, we would definitely do it. What do I look out for in a legal pack? Point number one is I look at what is missing in the legal pack. Because sometimes it's that document that's missing in the legal pack that's super important. Mm-hmm. For example, you are buying a leasehold property. You don't have a set of the management accounts. You don't know whether there are any service charge arrears. You don't know whether there are any ground rent arrears. But not just the arrears. You don't know what the service charge is. But not just that. You don't know whether there are any Section 20 works, you know, potentially coming around the corner. So sometimes it's the documents that are missing in a legal pack that are super duper important.
Do you think that that should be illegal to not include documents like that? It seems a bit unfair, doesn't it, for someone who doesn't know what they're because obviously you know what's missing.
Yes.
But if you're a lay person going in and there's something missing,
that
seems crazy they're allowed to do that, no?
Well, yes, you're right. Seems crazy they are allowed to do it, but it's buyer beware, isn't it? So if you read the legal pack beforehand, and if you find that there are missing documents, most auctioneers in this country are open. They also want to sell the property. So if you ask the question, you're normally likely to get an answer. It may not be the ideal answer, but I think we should develop a culture where, you know, we should ask. You know, if you think something is a bit off with the legal pack, pick up the phone, speak to the auctioneers, ask them the questions. And that's just that. In terms of whether it's illegal or not, I see where you're coming from. And as to whether it should be made law, I think there are quite a few things that could be changed, Russell. I genuinely do. Because when it comes to auctions, I don't think there's as much transparency as there ought to be, especially for people who are probably not as experienced in that arena. But I think it's a bit like tax. I don't know much about tax, which is why I go to my tax expert. Do you see what I mean? Mm. So I think it's just understanding, you know, okay, maybe I don't have that much experience in this area. Between now and the time I gain experience, let me go to somebody who's, you know, probably more educated than me in that regard only. So that's what I would say between now and the time that we put the world to right and change all of that.
Yeah, that makes sense. So why do you think people typically sell their properties at auction rather than the traditional method?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I say it's a really good point, Russell, because that's the first, well, not first, because I think we've talked about the first. Maybe that's an important thing to consider when you're thinking of buying at auction. A question you should ask yourself is why? Why is this property being sold at auction? It could be sold conventionally with a local agent who knows the area better than this other auctioneer in London or somewhere. So why is this property being sold at auction? That's a question that you should ask yourself if you're thinking of buying a property at auction. And I think some of the plausible reasons would be perhaps it's a mortgagee in possession who's selling the property. The property's been repossessed. That's understandable. Yes, so I wouldn't have any concerns about that. Is it a housing association that is selling the property? Yep, housing associations, they sell their properties through auction. That's understandable. So I wouldn't have any issues with that. Is it a trader selling the property? It could be, because that's what traders actually do. But if it's a trader, you want to be a bit more careful, do you not? And I'm not going to say a lot more because I act for a lot of traders. So that's that. But I think the key thing is, why is the property being sold at auction? Has it got a legal disability? Has it got a structural disability? What are the issues? So I think that's important.
Yeah, yeah. Or it might just be that they want the money fast.
100%. You're right as rain. It may be that. And I have sold properties at auction myself, not because they had issues, but just because I wanted to get rid of them.
Yeah.
And I needed that degree of certainty. I didn't want to be hanging around for 7 months, 8 months, 9 months. I just wanted to know that, yeah, I'm going to put it at auction. It's going to sell. Get my money in 28 days. And that works.
You're right, though. There is normally a reason, whether it's a fast sale, whether it's the slight issues. But as a property entrepreneur, having issues is a good thing.
That's true.
Right? Because you can solve the issues.
That's true.
It's only a bad thing if you don't know about the issues, right? So if you're aware of it, like you say, do your due diligence, check the legal pack.
Yeah.
So let's say we're buying from auction then. The first thing we need to be asking the question, I agree with you, is why are they selling this at auction?
Yeah.
You need to be reading the legal pack.
Yeah.
You need to be making sure that all your money is lined up.
Yeah.
You touched on surveys. Would you recommend getting a survey done before bidding?
Yes, I would recommend that, but that's theoretical. If we look at it practically, when you're buying a property at auction, you've probably got three properties in the same auction cycle that you're looking at. So practically, financially, are you going to be able to have three surveys commissioned, three legal packs reviewed by a solicitor? you know, by the time you get to getting the property, are you going to be out of pocket? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think a survey is super duper important, but I also think inspecting the property yourself, you know, you could see what needs to be seen. But if you can, and I think it also depends on the value of the property that you're buying. If you're buying a property for 15,000 and you've gone to view it, by the time you expend loads more money, it'd probably be non-profitable for you, potentially, but it depends, doesn't it? But if you're buying a humongous building somewhere, you may want to carry out surveys all the time. But what is the summary? Of course, carry out a survey.
Yeah, so that would be best case, but you're right, because obviously then it's going to cost you money.
Yeah.
How much typically does it cost to get a solicitor to look at a legal pack? What are we talking?
A detailed review will be £350 plus VAT. But just like a headline review, it'll be £100 plus VAT.
Okay, so you could do a few headline reviews, and if it was one that you wanted to really go for,
can do it a bit 100%, more. 100%, and I would encourage that. And I think that I got distracted. One of your questions, you were saying the documents that are important in a legal pack, and I think I focused on the documents that are missing.
Okay.
Yeah. So you need to first look at the title. Is the person who's selling entitled to sell? Are they the registered proprietor or are they not? So check the title deeds. That's very, very important. You also want to consider your intentions with the property. What do you want to do? Do you want to use it as a buy-to-let? Do you want to use it as an office? What do you want to use the property for? And by that, you then look at the restrictive covenants, because restrictive covenants don't just apply to leasehold properties. They can sometimes apply even in freehold properties. So a common restriction is use the property only as a private dwelling. Some of us want to have our offices there and do different things. So that could actually stop us from being able to do that. If it's buy to let, sometimes you have restrictions. Let's just say buy to let and you want to split the rooms and use it as a HMO. Sometimes you've got a restrictive covenant that says use only as a single family dwelling. If you've got that, it could be an uphill task in terms of you splitting the property into four separate units when you've been told that you can only let it to, you know, a single family unit, unless if you want to let four separate units to one family unit. But I don't think that would work, you know, from a HMO perspective. So there are quite a lot of restrictive covenants that I could cover, but you want to read the documentation to make sure that you can do whatever it is that you propose to do with the property. And what you also want to think about, Russell, is you want to look at the searches, you know, your local authority searches. If you want to extend the property, your drainage search, have you looked at the searches? Is there a septic tank within the boundary of the property? You know, where exactly is it? Would that prevent you from extending in that direction? So it's just all those things that don't seem like a lot, but in the grand scheme of things, they really matter, because this is an investment. You want to be able to make money, not lose money.
Yeah. And a lot of that, of course, from what you're saying, depends on what your end goal is.
Yes.
So it's having an end goal in mind, which we touched on as well with the bridging. Yeah. So obviously, yes, if you're going to get bridging, you can't just use bridging as a mortgage, because you've got to pay it back.
You do.
It needs to be, okay, we're going to get bridging because we can add value and we know the value is going to be, you know, it's going to go up by 100 grand.
Yes.
We can then refinance it.
Yeah.
Pay off the bridging, or we can then sell it and pay off the bridging. But you need to know what the end game is when you're going in as well, which is, I think, yeah, that's right. It's really important. Talk to me a bit about pre-auction and post-auction, and how property entrepreneurs, investors can make a lot of money and get great deals using those strategies.
Those are quite interesting strategies. Most of my clients are doing post-auction rather than pre-auction, because I find that if you make an offer pre-auction, you are inadvertently perhaps encouraging the vendor to think, yeah, there's quite a lot of interest, I'm going to go to the room. So most offers that I make, in my experience, and this is a humble experience because I'm not an auctioneer, I'm a property investor who also happens to be a lawyer. So in my experience, the post-auction offers are the best. And those are the strategies that some of my most successful clients are using at the moment. So they will watch a property. Sometimes they actually have the auctioneers call them, say, hey, we've seen a property. Yeah, it's right up your street. Da 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 da. Like, okay, I'll sit tight and I'll wait until auction. And then after auction, pick up the phone. It didn't sell. This is my offer. And Russell, some of the offers that are being accepted, ridiculous.
Really?
Ridiculous. Way below guide, way below reserve. Because people are desperate to sell. You and I know that the property market is not where it ought to be. We've got the interest rates, We have got the regulatory changes. We've got loads of reasons why some landlords are super desperate to sell, you know, and it's not attractive in as much as, you know, my clients are happy to be able to get those amazing offers. But sometimes there's somebody else who is struggling at the other end of the...
And when they put that offer in, are they agreeing to auction terms?
Oh, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. So you and I were talking about the completion dates, like 28 days. They could say, yep, I agree, 56 days, that's what I want. I agree, but completion has to be. So there's a lot more legroom in post-auction offers.
And you could then do your due diligence, right?
You could, but once that offer has been agreed, they want to exchange straight away.
Yeah.
Do you see? So within that window, I would, whilst it's part of the negotiations, I would say, I just need my solicitor to quickly check this or read it yourself if you can. So yeah, you're right in that regard. But once you've exchanged, the hammer falls even virtually.
You can give yourself a couple of days.
100%.
As part of the negotiation. Why to not? Then, to save you paying for those things up front.
100%.
If you saw something that you fancy the look of, you ring up, look, I'll offer this, but I may need a couple of days just to check X, Y, Z.
Yeah, you can definitely do that. And I think there's power in that, because here's one negotiating tactic that you could utilize. You could say, okay, I'll make an offer now and I'll complete within, you know, 60 days or whatever. And they'll say, no, the vendor wants to complete right away. Like, okay, well, when is your next auction? And they tell you when the next auction is. You're like, okay. So you're going to wait until the next auction. You don't even know whether it's going to be sold at the next auction. And then after the next auction, you'll still need another 28 days or however long. So whichever way, what I'm giving you, it's a good deal.
Yeah, it's faster.
100%. You know it. So, yeah.
And I suppose the auctioneer is motivated because they've just had a property fail to sell at auction.
That's true. I think everyone is motivated because the vendor wanted to sell in the first place. You know, it hasn't sold. Now they've got a potential buyer. And as you say, the auctioneers, they want their commission too. So everybody wants to sell. And then you've got a willing buyer.
Give us an example of the type of deal that you've sort of overseen that's been a post-auction where you thought, wow, that's a banging deal.
My client wanted to bid on a property. He tried to make an offer pre-auction and they said the vendor would take 320. But after auction, he got it for 281. That was a fire sale.
Wow.
There was a real good reason behind why the vendor really desperately needed to sell.
Yeah.
But I just think, okay, that's a crazy example, but it is a real example. But my thought process is maybe if people are that desperate to start with, perhaps maybe we should lower the reserve or the guide and things. But I think sometimes we're hopeful, aren't we?
Yeah.
And that's just basically that. So I have to be super cautious of the fact that, I think I've said that before. I'm not saying it's unethical, but I'm just saying that it's good to get a good deal. But sometimes with these good deals, there's somebody on the other end who's probably in a financial, who's probably stuck.
Unless it's already gone, like if it's been repossessed, for example.
Yes, that's true. I can sleep at night if it's that. But for me, it's just when I'm thinking, it's probably like an elderly couple who wanted to use a property as their retirement and they can't afford the mortgage and they desperately want to sell. So if I look at it that way, then it's like, oh my God, okay, is that a really good thing? But it is what it is, isn't it? It's the nature of the beast.
I suppose if they're accepting your offer, that means the alternative is worse.
That's true.
So even though it might not be what they originally wanted, what you're offering them is still better than what they've got right now.
You should be a therapist. You're making me feel better. Thank you. Yeah, take that.
I saw an interview with Vanilla Ice. Do you know Vanilla Ice, the rapper?
Oh, right. Yeah. Yes.
And so he's a property investor.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, over in America. It's interesting. He's not viewing them, not doing anything, just getting the valuation done, offering less. And that's his strategy.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. That really is unbelievable. But that reminds me of traders, though. Some traders do that, don't they?
Yeah.
As long as the figures stack up. They don't really care because they don't need to view it. They're going to flog it at the next auction. So they're going to sell it. They couldn't care less. So I think we're doing it here in Great Britain. And that's what traders are doing. Yeah. So yeah, interesting 100%.
Very, very, very interesting. Well, it's been real pleasure having you on. Very, very interesting. I do think auctions, if you know what you're doing.
Yes.
And you're not an idiot. If you get the right checks and you follow the formulas, you can make a lot of money buying at auction. It's a brilliant strategy. But
100%.
You can also lose a lot of money if you mess it up. So you've got to make sure you do it properly. And I think you've given some real nuggets for how to do it on the show. So I really appreciate having you on.
Oh, it's been fun. Thank you so much, Russell.
No problem
at all. Appreciate you.
Thank you ever so much.
Thank you.